he prophesied, I think it was in the 13th year of King Josiah, and which left 18 years he prophesied till Josiah's death. So you have 18 plus 11 of Jehoiakim plus 11 of Jehoiachin, and then Zedekiah, and then we have another clue. I would think that Jeremiah had written, was alive at that time, where it mentions about Jeconiah having been raised to the king's table from prison to partake of meals at the table in the 37th year of the Jeconiah captivity. This was 15 years after the destruction of Jerusalem. So if you add up all the figures, at least to that particular period of time, it would add to 55. Let's see if we can do that. 18 plus 11 plus 11. 18 plus 22 is 40. And then the 15 years of remaining time, bringing us to the 37th year of the Jeconiah captivity. So that's 55 years. Now, we know that he couldn't have written the Book of Lamentations during the siege of Jerusalem in 606 B.C., nor when he was down in Egypt. So it would be sometime when he was in subsequent to that time. And we think there are clues to show that he eventually ended up in among the exiles in the north, in Babylon. In fact, I think there is evidence that he perhaps died in the vicinity of Lake Ur Maya, which would be up near Turkey, but in, I believe it would be probably Afghanistan, in today's geography. Well, anyway, that be that what it may. Now we are ready to commence the Book of Lamentations, which is a very, very structured book. And as previously said, that each verse was alphabetized in the sequence of the alphabet. And this last chapter is no exception, because it probably ends with 22 verses, just like three of the others, excepting the middle chapter. Now, we have verse 1. Let us, I think, for my convenience, the way I look at this chapter as a whole, I would think verses 1 through 5 would be the first natural sequence to consider. So if someone could read there, Brother, let's see. Well, I'll make a choice. Brother Brendan, verses 1 to 5.
Remember, O Lord, what has come upon us. Consider and behold our reproach. Our inheritance is turned to strangers, our houses to aliens. We are orphans and fatherless, our mothers are as widows. We have drunken our water for money, our wood is sold unto us. Our necks are under persecution, we labor and have no rest.
All right. Just before we ask questions, you'll notice in reading this that it pertains to circumstances that existed while Israel, or the Jews, or Judah, let's say, currently are in exile at the time of the setting of verses 1 through 5, where they're in captivity. All right, now, questions.
No response.
All right. When it states in verse 1, remember, O Lord, what has come upon us, consider and behold our reproach. The reproach in exile. This is self-explanatory. Next verse states, our inheritance is turned to strangers, our houses to aliens. Now, if there's no outburst, our inheritance would be the land that they formerly occupied, their homeland, and which God gave them, the land of Canaan. And what would be helpful is that we must remember that the extent of Israel's property prior to this destruction included Lebanon as well as what we think of as Israel today, which is south of that. Then it says it's turned to strangers, our houses to aliens. Well, it doesn't mean that the aliens resided in the desolate houses as that were still in the land of Israel, because many of them were already destroyed and the land is described as being desolate. But it would mean, as I would understand it, that property, much of that existed in the land that could be exploited by the Babylonians for use in their homeland, that is in Babylon. They would exploit the land and take whatever existed in its current state at that time to make use of in the homeland, their homeland. And it's completely at the disposal of the captors. And they exploited it, as we will find as time goes on. Verse 3 says, we are orphans, fatherless, our mothers as widows. So we see that, we notice that that's something that they're lacking is fathers, the males. The males were slain, the great, great bulk of them, except the few that were taken into captivity that are enumerated at the end of the book of Jeremiah. So, but the women generally were spared to some extent. Remember, they were the ones who departed from the city at the advice of Jeremiah. He says, if you want to live, my advice to you is, of course I'm ad-libbing this, is to desert to Nebuchadnezzar's foe. Leave the city, run outside. I guarantee that your life will not be taken from you, but you will be a prey. You will be a captive eventually in a foreign land. And several took his advice, Jeremiah's, and thus their lives were preserved. Whereas those who stayed in the city, well, they were all massacred. And the only ones that we know of that were specifically spared was Jeremiah, who incidentally was just outside the city wall at the time or circumstance of the fall of the city. And then the black man who let down the rope to pull him out of the cistern, and we think Baruch, their lives were spared, were very exceptional. Now the mothers were widows because of the loss of their males, the husbands. And it's interesting that today the Muslims, when they destroy cities and all today, I'm not going to go into the different incidents, they usually spare the women, but they slaughter the men. That's their chief concern. We are orphans and fatherless, our mothers as widows. Now comes a very interesting verse. It says, we have drunken our water for money. Our wood is sold unto us. This is the evidence of the exploitation of the mineral and other wealth that still existed in desolate Israel and Judah. That they used the trees, they cut down the trees for wood, and then they were taken back to Babylon and sold there. Incidentally, Babylon had a shortage of trees, except for the garden of Nebuchadnezzar that he wondrously adorned, which was one of the seven wonders of the world at that time. Now, their wood, when they were in captivity, they had to pay for it. They earned wages in Babylonian captivity, and they had to buy their own the lumber from their own homeland, and the water that was secured from Lebanon. Notice that in Lebanon, that you had the headwaters of the River Jordan, and very fresh up at that source. And so even the water was utilized, and that they would be drinking that for money. They'd have to pay for it, which is ironical, that the produce from the desolated land, that it's material wealth that still existed there. Here, they were. It was like swallowing spittle, as it were, to them, and very humiliating. Now, any questions before we continue the last verse?
No response.
Verse 5 says, "Our necks are under persecution; we labor and have no rest." The few males that were taken into captivity, as well as those who previously were taken captivity in the desolation of the northern kingdom, this added to the number of males. But the males that were in captivity, really speaking, were exploited to do menial labor. And some of that menial labor was grinding food, and this was done, of course, in not like today, but by machinery, but by the turning of millstones by hand, and it was laborious work that they had to do, servile work, and that there were no coffee breaks and rest periods. They had to work long hours, and strength was exploited by the Babylonians for their own pleasure and use. So these verses 1 through 5 show the when Jeremiah is writing this, the situation and the feelings, the emotions of those who were then in captivity, expressing it in this unusual form, like a sort of a codified form where you had the alphabet involved, for memory's sake. And this would be very wonderful. And you notice that who else had done this in one case was the prophet David. Remember in the 119th Psalm? He alphabetized the 119th Psalm with the 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet that existed at that time. The alphabet was changed to 24 letters at a much later period of time in history. We're not going to go into that at this moment, but at this time, 22 verses. And this helps for the memory's sake. We might just ad-lib something. We saw a couple nights ago a audio video that Brother Raymond Luke showed of conditions that existed in Ghana, in Africa. And we will not go into the emotions of that, but one particular scene, you had maybe let's say, 20 children, black children, and to show their schooling, they recited in unison the different books of the Bible, and they chanted Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, you see, just like that, through the entire Old Testament, without hesitation. Everyone spoke in unison and with great distinction of enunciation. It was remarkable. See, they're starting very young. Now, who can do that here? I can't even do that, I don't think, ad lib. Maybe I can, but I'm not that sure. And then the one who has directed them prompted them to go out to the New Testament. And they went to the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and right on. So you can see that this sequence, alphabetizing, is helpful to memory, that you have to have some structural background. And it was utilized and of great benefit. In other words, Lamentations was written by Jeremiah for posterity and to be used like Jews did at the Wailing Wall. Now, these are the first five verses. Can we go on? Are you still with me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I can't help. All right, let's have a reading of verses.
Brother Frank?
Yes?
Just so you know, you can. I don't know how loud you're speaking, just so you don't get unnecessarily tired.
Yeah. I speak normally loud because of the ringing in my ears. And Esther constantly has to say, you're not talking to an audience, and I'm talking privately to her.
Okay, just so you're aware.
All right, thank you.
You're coming through very clear.
Could Brother Darrell read verses 6 through 8?
We have given the hand to the Egyptians and to the Assyrians to be satisfied with bread. Our fathers have sinned and are not, and we have borne their iniquities. Servants have ruled over us. There is none that doth deliver us out of their hand.
All right. And now, the reason we have sectionalized this in our mind, verses 6 through 8, is that there's a slight change here than the first five verses. In the sense that the time setting is slightly different. Not, it's still being in captivity, but the time setting that's being referred to while they are in captivity is different than the first five verses, because it goes back to the condition that existed in Israel prior to the 606 desolation and subsequent exile. It's going back into their past history where they have sinned and have been guilty. Now, are there any questions before we go into the verse by verse of verses 6 through 8, or comments?
No.
We have given the hand to the Egyptians and to the Assyrians to be satisfied with bread. Well, of course, I think the thing that would normally, with all of us, stand out is about this giving of the hand to Egypt, as to what that might signify. Well, of course, there are various explanations, and of course, incidentally, there are marginal references that are of value, probably on this verse as well as others, but it would be, if we put it in today's language, it wasn't too long ago that when you gave the hand to somebody, it was like a mini covenant. It was like the signing of a contract, an agreement, and done by a handshake. And so, symbolically speaking, I think it shows that they traded and made alliances, whether it's business alliance, commercial, actual promises. We know they did this as regards the Babylonians, because they actually took an oath to Jehovah when the Babylonians made Zedekiah promise under oath. You know, like you go to court and they put your hand on the Bible, do you swear, you know, to tell the whole truth, nothing but the truth, to help you God? Well, the Babylonians did the same thing with regard to Zedekiah making a covenant. So you can see the significance in the different degrees of giving the hand to, the, as it were, the enemy, the traditional enemies such as Egypt and Assyria. And the, notice the sequence. It first started with Egypt. They cooperated with Egypt at first, and that became fruitless, and I can't go into the detail now. And then later they found it convenient to deal with the Babylonians. So we have given the hand to be satisfied with bread. This was it was expedient for them to not cut off their head or mouth despite the body. And that's the way that verse ends. And our fathers have sinned and are not. So it's a very depressing mood that the prophet Jeremiah is mentioning at this time. And we have borne our iniquities. So really what it amounts to, ever since the Exodus from Egypt, it's nothing but a sad story of wandering from the paths that the Lord had begged them to follow for their own blessing's sake. And servants have ruled over us. And of course, this has been their past experience. Well, even it went back to the period of the judges, back and forth. But now it's still the same. None doth deliver us out of their hand. Now he's coming back to their current condition in Babylonian exile. So it's been nothing but the rewards of disobedience have brought very undesirable circumstances upon the people of God who were in covenant relationship with him, and their disobedience, the fruits of it they had experienced and did experience at that time. Can we go on now to verses 9 through 13? Yes, all right.
Brother Frank, I have a question.
Yes.
I want to make sure I understand verse 6.
All right.
So what you're saying was that previously, like probably in the, maybe even in a previous generation, the reference to the fathers, that they had made this alliance with Egypt and Assyria, and that now Jeremiah is saying he sees that was sinning and it was a lack of faith and not relying on the Lord?
Yes, but the fathers, I'm not saying Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
No, but maybe
fathers subsequent. That when you, as time went on, the leadership of Israel, under the sponsorship, whether it was under the leadership of the judges or the leadership of the kings, we found that they wandered in the process of time, in every circumstance, wandered from the path, as it were, of truth. Josiah, let's take good King Josiah, that he died when he went out to fight the Babylonians. He joined with the Egyptians, in battle. This wasn't a Judah battle. He was slain in that thing, and this was all for convenience sake, because then the enemy was considered the northern kingdom. It says Assyria, later it was Babylon. It was Nebuchadnezzar, actually, when Josiah was slain, and he defeated Egypt. And in the subsequent of that defeat of Egypt, Josiah died in that battle. Then later on, they sided with the Babylonians, making treaties with them, what happened, they proved to be like a broken branch, just like Egypt was. That pierced their side.
Brother Brendan?
Yes.
I was just thinking, too, that it's much like their situation today, where they're making treaties and alliances with a variety of the European and certainly American nations.
Yes, that's certainly a proper analogy, and not one. Excuse me. But we can see, certainly, this isn't to be commended, what they're doing today,
right,
from the Lord's standpoint. But from the world's standpoint, they considered all of it very, very judicious. Expedient. Reading verses 9.
Sister Di.
All right.
Just to clear my mind, I wasn't sure. Didn't Josiah died by King Necho of Egypt?
Yes.
When he trying to invade Babylon, King Josiah was on the side of Babylon instead of on the side of Egypt. That's why King Necho killed Josiah?
No, I didn't get that. I didn't understand it that way. Of course, maybe you can do that, but I don't. I think he sided with Egypt against Babylon, and in that battle, we could go into this in detail, but we'd prefer not to be hung up on that. But you can see it was Egypt against, at that time, against the Nebuchadnezzar. Remember, he had one arm broken, and then later, a second arm broken. That is Egypt. Pharaoh. In reading, let's see, what was it, verses 9 through 13. Brother Russell, if you could read that yourself.
We get our bread with the peril of our lives because of the sword of the wilderness. Our skin was black like an oven because of the terrible famine. They ravished the women in Zion and made maids in the cities of Judah. And the maids in the city of Judah. Princes are hanged by their hand. The faces of elders were not honored. They took the young men to grind, and the children fell under the wood.
All right. For convenience sake, we have broken the verses in this fashion. Now he's digressing and reminiscing on the actual conditions that existed while Jerusalem was under siege, and that he witnessed personally himself, and what happened when they were under siege. One of the things they had a problem with was the supply of food. It was becoming more and more limited as the siege was prolonged. And what happened at that time, at great peril, they would send young men out to gather food outside of the ring of captivity in the darkness of night, and to get this food under very perilous conditions, and then to return with these crumbs, as it were, to help them to prolong their lives, hopefully that they would survive the siege itself. This shows one condition, and that many of them were slain in doing that because they were caught. You have this in history. Remember the Warsaw Ghetto when it was surrounded by the Nazis? They dug tunnels, the Jews, outside the ring, the cordon that was set around Warsaw, and the young men, or the physically capable, would go out to get food from the city, from the rest of the city, and sneak back into the tunnel and get back into the ghetto to help them survive under that circumstance. Well, some of them were caught and were slain. This is a natural thing that would be done in the fight for survival. Now, the very fact that it's food that's involved, remember it says, we got our bread. And then the next thing it said, our skin was black, like an oven. And the peculiar thing is that when you die of famine, the skin does darken. And becomes leathery, stomachs pop up, like the belly swells. It depends on one's age, for one factor, as to the circumstances. But this was because of the terrible famine. So bread in verse 9, famine in verse 10 was the natural subsequent experience that they had under siege. Now, when you come to verse 11, they ravished the women in Zion. When they broke through the walls of Jerusalem, well, this is one of the natural things. The soldiers were rewarded for their efforts in the siege. They were away from their families of satisfying their lusts or choosing maidens to take back as captives to their homeland for whatever purpose they might have in mind. So the women were exploited when they broke through the walls of Zion, and the maids in the cities of Judah. This is like many of the Psalms, like a couplet, where you sort of reiterate what's said before.
Brother Frank?
Yes.
I was thinking, even though there's a footnote also, but it does come to mind the Zechariah 14 about the prophecy. Soon to come, we think, with Jacob's trouble, where it does talk about the women being ravaged, etc.
That's right. That's right. So you can see this is, some have said, history repeats itself. And that is very, very true. In the study of a broad brush of history, you find that history does repeat itself. And in America and other nations, this is the story. And it seems that we all have to learn through each of us personally in our own lives what other people had to personally learn in their own life experience, even as individuals. Now you'll notice here, verse 12, princes are hanged up by their hand. And this, when they broke through the walls, they took the heirs apparent, those of the nobility, those of a higher stature in life, among the captives that still existed in the city. In the meantime, where was the king?
Trying to run.
Yeah, the king wasn't there. They couldn't hang him up. So he was fleeing down to Jericho while this happened. When they saw the wall was about to be broken, he and many of the army followed him, and they went out via the direction of the Pool of Siloam. There was an exit there. Even in the underneath the city of Jerusalem, in not Solomon's Stables, but the other place, Solomon's Mines. Yeah, that's in up near the Damascus Gate. When you turn to the right, they let you in there, where you can go down, and finally you see a spring or well dripping. But to the left there was a tunnel that at one time was opened up into an avenue of escape down to Jericho. We pointed that out on one tour when we were in there. And that's where the king fled, to go down to Jericho, but was captured. Now you'll notice, at the time of a similar desolation of Jerusalem in A.D. 70, what did they do? They crucified the men on the walls, particularly the ones who tried, when they broke the outer wall and did not yet break the inner wall of the city, they, on the outer wall, they took the men and crucified them all around the city. His blood be upon us and our children was vividly fulfilled at the siege in A.D. 70. But so instead of hanging them up by their hands, which was a form of indignity, the next desolation in A.D. 70 was even more horrible in the crosses being erected, or stakes, on the wall of Jerusalem. So this is history repeating itself. And the faces of elders were not honored. But the males were treated alike. Among the males, there were no distinctions of office recognized by the captors of the captives at that time. And they took the young men to grind, and the children fell under the wood. So we find that the in before they broke the inner wall, some of the men they took, but relatively few. But the, even those who deserted at Jeremiah's advice, plus a few before they broke through the second wall, they utilized, because they saw these men were physical, they would be useful in captivity, and they did not put them to death and exploited them. And children, they did kill many children. Some were eaten by their mothers, and the fathers ate of that stew too. When they broke in the second wall, everybody was slain, I believe. So this is a very sordid memory, but the permission of evil in this macabre sense, it seems to be almost necessarily to slam the victory, the lesson home, to penetrate our dull minds. This then in history, to all the inhabitants that will ever create this universe, or universes plural, they will see a most vivid and dramatic exhibition of the permission of evil and the contagion, infection of sin, how pervasive and degrading it is. Can we go on?
Comment.
All right.
In verse 13, where it says they took the young men to grind, is that just saying that the men were used in menial labor, or is that a reference back to Samson, that they actually were used in a humiliating way, as Samson was, to grind the grain?
Yes. Well, while the cross reference probably refers to Samson, yes, that would be one of the things. And, usually the women do it with a pestle and a crucible. You know, they grind their food. But then when you do it for, let us say, for a prince of Babylon, well, you have to do it for him and for his family and for his... and so they used the young men in a servile condition in their own private homes or mansions in Babylon. This work, whether it was done in like Samson, but not with the type of stone that he did, the upper and nether millstone of such a size as he would have had to utilize his strength, but would be in a more a larger sense than a little crucible and a little pestle that the ordinary women of ancient times all had to use to prepare an ordinary meal. Menial labor, that's about what it means, figuratively expressed. They were not to, as a rule, use that way, especially in that captivity. It's interesting that in the earlier captivity, that the king of Babylon, he took of the better people. Like, let's take Daniel and the three Hebrew children, and the king Jehoiakim, the queen, and the princes at that time. They were treated differently than the others. The king was put into prison. The queen, of course, we don't know what happened to her. Let's see where we are. That's verse 13. They took the young men to grind, and the children fell under wood. Under the wood. Yeah, the children were used to whatever they could do. I remember when I was a boy, a very small boy, under certain circumstances, which I won't narrate, I had to go quite a distance to get gasoline or kerosene for the stove. And it was in like a gallon jug that I had to go. And I had to walk maybe, I don't know, it was a quarter of a mile or half a mile. But when you carry a gallon jug of whether it's kerosene or water, it is heavy for a child, let's say 8 or 9 years of age. And I had to do with that myself, and I know of just a little bit, that, and the children fell under the wood. Wow, this is very touching. This is a very unusual lamentation requiem that Jeremiah composed for history. Can we continue 14 through 18?
Yes.
Sister Carol, please.
The elders have ceased from the gate, the young men from their music. The joy of our heart is ceased, our dance is turned into mourning. The crown is fallen from our head, woe unto us that we have sinned. For this our heart is faint, for these things our eyes are dim. Because of the mountain of Zion, which is desolate, the foxes walk upon it.
All right. And of course, 14 through 18 is like a soliloquy of the effects of sinning. It's the product, the fruitage of error of conduct. And now, verse 14. The elders have ceased from the gate, the young men from their music. Any comment on that?
That a reference to the Sanhedrin was no longer sitting in judgment anymore?
That's right. They certainly didn't sit in any honorable position when they were captives. You'll notice in the book of Ezekiel, his circumstance was a little different. In the sense that when he was taken into captivity, that the elders came to his house, the house of Ezekiel, and sat, but certainly not at the city gates. Not at the city, what was there, 100 gates to the city of Babylon? Well, in those 100 gates, you can be sure there were no Jewish judges seated. When you read about the young men from their music, you almost automatically think of that we hung our harps on the willows, you know, and they said, sing us a song. And how can we sing a song, you know, under the circumstances that we're at with our city in desolation, etc.? And incidentally, you notice that the people there in the Mideast, it seems by nature they're a little different than we are here. You know, we are victims of environment to a certain extent, as well as, the genes that we possess in our bodies. But you'll notice, let's take the Russians when they dance. You notice how they jump up and down and they do calisthenics and everything? It's a clean, joyous dance, exuberant. And they do loop-de-loops and whatnot, and it's very nice. There's something about it that is has no smuttiness at all involved. Well, Israel itself is very much like the Russian in temperament, at least in the past. I'm not speaking about today because I am not, but that's the way historians have. And the nature of their music, when you listen to the Russian and Jewish music, it has a different beat than the African beat, the American beat that we have in our music here. There's something very... the nearest thing we have, I think, here is the joy of our heart is ceased, our dance is turned into mourning. Verse 16 says that the crown is fallen from our head. Woe unto us that we have sinned. It's interesting. Notice the exclamation point, at least in the King James that I have, which would be proper. Woe unto us that we have sinned, exclamation point. Now, the crown falling from the head would signify?
Most God's favor.
All right. That's certainly very important. Sinning is a fall from God's favor.
How about also the individual, the ability to govern themselves individually?
All right. When you think of the crown of the head, as evidently you are in a literalized sense, you know, the skull, the crown, not debilitating, but demeaning experience that they have. I would think, too, the crown jewel fallen from their head was the destruction of the temple and the fall of the city of Jerusalem. Even the city of Jerusalem is in some places in the Bible is expressed that even the foreigners noticed that Jerusalem was a very unique city and very impressive, let alone the temple itself. And that was taken from collectively speaking, but certainly individually speaking, they were not recognized in any sense for their personal worth. At the 606 destruction, besieging, and captivity of the people at that time. We're not speaking about Daniel, Ezekiel, the three Hebrew children. This is former captivity. For this our heart is faint. For these our eyes are dim. The crown falling from the head and the music, the joy, the ceasing, the lack of recognition of the elders, all these things, for these our eyes have become dim. Now, 18, because of the mountain of Zion, which is desolate, the foxes walk upon it. That's almost like adding insult to injury. The foxes walking on the ruins of the temple and the city.
Brother Frank?
Yes.
Is that word foxes there jackals?
Yes. It would be what we would call, because I tell you, the foxes of England and America are well fed.
Yeah.
The jackals are... They're continually under starvation. Go on.
I was going to say jackals being carrion eaters, and there would certainly be a lot of carrion at that time after the destruction.
But certainly at the time of the destruction, yes. But they also, you see what has happened, in the ruins, the foxes have nice homes for them, stone homes. In the ruins, they have their nice holes. They don't have to dig them. They're there. Why, they actually, they don't crumble like the like soil would. It's like in the ocean when you have a shipwreck. The ship sinks to the bottom of the sea. What happens? The fish try to get the lay claim to sections of the fish for a home. They don't have to dig down the mud and go under a rock. Why, they have a nice little a cubicle that's already made, and it seems to be more substantial than they themselves could make. So it's like, it's very ironical. It's macabre, this sort of situation. If you could see it, what was the beauty of Israel, of Zion situate upon the hill, its beauty, and then see this present, this other condition of utter desolation, of ruins and bramble and foxes, hyenas, and other creatures taking possession of the city, as it were.
Brother Frank?
Yes.
Brother Frank, can we go back to 16 for 1 minute?
Yes.
The crown falling from our head, that's not a reference to Zedekiah?
Yes, the king. Yes, that could be the king too. Yes, it could be. I see it as being very broad. The temple, the city, the king.
Sister Gail has a comment.
Yeah.
On that thought of their dance being turned into mourning, from an opposite standpoint, and to show how.
Pardon me for interrupting. Say that again.
In verse 15, where it says, our dance is turned into mourning, from an opposite standpoint, to show how the Israelites were given to emotion and expressive, spontaneous dancing, we think of how David danced joyously before the Lord when the tabernacle was taken up to Jerusalem. So this would show definitely the opposite experience, where they're just so depressed and sad at heart.
Yes. Yes. We were just trying to show that even as a people, they're a little different than some other nations. And their change of situation. Now we're getting near the end. Let's see. In last verses. 19 to 20. Sister Gail, if you'd read that, please.
Thou, O Lord, remainest forever, thy throne from generation to generation. Wherefore dost thou forget us forever and forsake us so long time?
When you take verse 19, the principle there, thou, O Jehovah, remainest forever, that is the ever-living God, thy throne from generation to generation, it reminds you of the stability, the endurance of Jehovah, and it reminds you, like with the Christian, who is advised by Paul to put his anchor within the veil into the Most Holy. That's the most secure place of rest, of stability. And to cast the anchor in there and hang on to the rope in the holy, as it were, the principle. And so now he is contrasting the former verses of the insecurity, the undesirability, the forlornness and unhappiness of their current situation in exile. But then now the only thing is that for him to do now is to throw in that anchor to the ever-living God. And that is the only hope. You remain. You're our only hope. And in verse 20, we get another clue. Wherefore dost thou forget us forever? Forsake us so long a time? What is interesting, the first part about the forsaking, that's very understandable. But what happens, this so long a time, it seems, is one of the other tidbits of information that we use, there are others, that indicate that Jeremiah himself lived a considerable time beyond the destruction of Jerusalem. And he was in the captivity, so that he himself is saying, so long a time. In the captivity. So that his ministry would be 55 years long, at least, I don't think is that unreasonable to say. And perhaps he lived even longer. The 50 years that Jeremiah, the 55 years of the ministry that we previously spoke of, must be added to his age when he began to be a prophet of the Lord. When would he begin to be a prophet of the Lord? At the age of 30, because Jeremiah was a priest. He was not an ordinary individual. And he would begin his public ministry at the age of 30 in the 13th year of the reign of Josiah, which would make him 85 years of age. Well, this 85 years of age is not so outstanding, because it can be proven that Daniel lived to be over 100 years of age, at least to 109 years of age. So this would not be beyond the realm of possibility. And therefore, other things pertaining to Jeremiah, not that he was in an active ministry, but that he lived longer, there seems to be other evidences besides this, that he lived well into the period of the captivity. Verses 21 to 22, Sister Dawn.
Turn thou us unto thee, O Lord, and we shall be turned. Renew our days as of old. But thou hast utterly rejected us. Thou art very wroth against us.
All right. When we read these verses, what do we think? He certainly concludes the Book of Lamentations on a sad note. Notice, isn't this a rather depressing end of the Book of Lamentations, befitting the book? It's a Book of Lamentation, and the climax is, it ends, thou art very wroth against us. That's the way it ends. Well, that's in order to get the conviction of sin that you have done wrong. It's better to end on a note like this than to end, I would think, under this circumstance, than on the note of retrieval. Because that's the purpose of the Book of Lamentations. To press point home, we have sinned. And that we have sinned reminds you of
Daniel,
as well as Jeremiah. You know, in his prayer. And Jeremiah was an example. He was very exemplar. We might just end with one other thing. You notice the older orthodoxy of Israel thought of Jeremiah as the greatest of the prophets. And to show, though, how much he was esteemed, I think I'll turn. Let's see, where was I going? Maybe the Book of Kings. I'm going the wrong direction here. Or let's take Chronicles. That'll be all right. The last chapter of Chronicles. That'll be maybe do it more succinctly. There would be, I think, 36 chapters. Second Chronicles. I have to get there. Notice, have you turned to it?
Yes.
Notice in that chapter, verse 21, it states, to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah. Notice verse 22, in the middle, that the word of the Lord spoken by the mouth of Jeremiah might be accomplished. Notice in the next book, Ezra, it states, verse 1, that the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah might be fulfilled. Here's three times that the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah is emphasized. We have also mentioned about the book of Zechariah. I think his influence is in the book of Zechariah. It is very pervasive. I think it affected Daniel as a person when he lived at that time. The testimony and the writing, the scroll of Jeremiah, was very, very meaningful. So I think, as a prophet, it's been wonderful to have studied the book of Jeremiah and now the Lamentations of Jeremiah. I think it's been a wonderful blessing to me, and hopefully it will be a benefit us as spiritual new creatures. I think we have to end the study because I think I've gone over.
Well, we have two hands up, Sister Dawn and then Sister Gail.
All right.
I have a question on the last verse, on verse 22.
All right.
That first phrase in the King James, it says, "But thou hast utterly rejected us."
Yes.
I noticed that there's a marginal reading, and the Revised also gives that same kind of thought, that rather it being a statement, it's a question. Or hast thou utterly rejected us?
Or wilt thou?
Yeah. Well, in the Hebrew, in expressing grammatically certain question form and a statement form is a very, very delicate nuance as to which it is under certain circumstances, so that you do have the liberty of interpreting it one way or the other. The only thing is we'd like to interpret it the way the Lord does in the final analysis. So I can see the existence of that being a question. Because in the was it the previous verse that says, "Why hast thou forsaken us?"
Verse 20 is the question.
Oh.
Two verses earlier.
Yeah. Well, I know it was previous somewhere.
Just so, making it a statement, "Thou hast utterly rejected us,"
yes,
seems against other scriptures where, of course, we know that the Lord has not utterly rejected Israel. And that's why I was thinking maybe the question form of it would be more appropriate.
Well, I think the appropriateness of this is a book of Lamentations. It's different than Ezekiel that gives the ray of hope. It's different than Isaiah, who is pretty strong in some of his language. He ends up with favorable things. Even Jeremiah did that in his regular book. Remember, behold, the days come, I'll make a new covenant. And then he shows with the Israel, very favorable. He goes from the 37th, 38th, 39th chapters, while it's Gog and Magog, it ends up wonderfully with a great victory for the Lord. So, but this is a book of Lamentations. I think the purpose of this book is different than the book of Jeremiah, the book of Isaiah, the book of Ezekiel. It's a different purpose.
Sister Gail had a comment, and then Sister Chai.
All right.
My comment was almost identical to Sister Dawn's. It seemed to me with the question, and my King James has a little differently than she read it, "For wilt thou utterly reject us?" It seems so plaintive and pitiful in the depths of depression, and then they're repenting for their sin.
But there's no answer.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to say. This, it ends on a note. It ends in the note of despair, of sorrow, of mourning.
Perfect.
Yes.
21, 22, the NIV puts in the term of prayer, almost like a prayer, "Restore us to yourself, O Lord, that we may turn. Renew our days as of old, unless," instead of "but" in King James, it says, "unless you have utterly rejected us and are angry with us beyond measure."
They're adding a couple words, one or two words there. They're taking liberty, but it's all right. I still think it ends on a note of despair, of introspection. The purpose is designed to stick the arrow into the heart of the individual, of the nation, to now what are you going to do about it? He does say earlier that God can do miracles, where he could turn his favor. I haven't got the thing before me now. I turn to Chronicles, but in an earlier verse he stated something favorable right near the end.
Verse 21.
But we're on Ezekiel, wait.
Lamentations.
Yeah, Lamentations, that's right. Oh, back here. Now we're getting closer to it. Oh, 21. "Turn thou us unto thee, O Lord, and we shall be turned." That's the, like the ray of hope, but there's no answer. But he shows what can be.
Okay, I think we have no more comments at this end.
All right. Then, Father Russell, would you conclude the study?
Dear Father in Heaven, we approach thy throne of grace, giving thanks to thee for the privilege that we enjoy of continued fellowship one with another, especially with Brother Frank and Sister Esther, and for the privilege of inquiring into thy word, especially the book of Lamentations. May we consider those things that thou hast recorded for our benefit, and to reflect upon them, that we might see the ultimate outcome of those things concerning natural Israel, that thou wouldst turn around the hearts of the Jews to eventually receive the Spirit and the truth. We're thankful to thee for this meeting and for thy loving kindness, and ask these favors and blessings in Jesus' name.
Amen. Amen.